O great sage, representative of the Lord, kindly satisfy my inquisitiveness in all that I have inquired from you, and all that I may have not inquired from you, from the very beginning of my questionings. Since I am a soul surrendered unto you, please impart full knowledge in this connection. Purport. The spiritual master is always prepared to impart knowledge to the disciple, and specifically when the disciple is very inquisitive. Inquisitiveness on the part of a disciple is greatly necessary for the progressive disciple. Maharaj Pritchett is a typical disciple because he is perfectly inquisitive. If one is not very inquisitive about self-realization, one need not approach a spiritual master simply to make a show of discipleship. Not only is Maharaj Pritchett inquisitive concerning all he has inquired about, but he is also anxious to know about what he has not been able to inquire. Factually, it is not possible for a man to inquire about everything from the spiritual master. But the bona fide spiritual master is able to enlighten the disciple in every way for the disciple's benefit. Om Agnanati Manasya Kanjana Shalaka Chakshuri Hasma Sri Guru. Naturally, a devotee wants to understand the process of material entanglement and the process of freedom from material entanglement. We're trying to get you all to see that there is a process known as material nature. Material nature is a process. It's doing things. Things are happening. It's causing things to happen. It's the effect of things that already happened. It's a process. Just like you go to an industrial center, a factory, a plant, chemical plant. The whole thing is a process for how to take raw materials and transform them into something else. Similarly, material nature is a process. Things are happening. Generally, what happens in material nature can be summarized under bhutva bhutva palayate. The living entities are being created and annihilated again and again and again. That's in terms of their external identity. The creation is coming into existence and going out of existence again and again and again and again. That is the process of material nature. What becomes will unbecome. Therefore, material existence is described as bhavasagara, the ocean of becoming and unbecoming. Just like the waves are coming in and out, similarly creation and annihilation come and go, come and go. And the conditions that we are so attached to, our bodies, the bodies of our friends and loved ones in society, our possessions, our cars, our buildings, our planes, etc. They're just like foam on top of the waves that appear and disappear. This is the process of material nature. Nothing can survive this process. Nothing material can survive. Of course, this process does not affect the spirit soul. But if you've forgotten your spiritual identity, then you have nothing to hold on to except to be swallowed up by this process of material nature. Once you become aware that life consists of the process of birth and death, the process of becoming and unbecoming, naturally you should start to inquire, is there a way out of this? In a prison, many prisoners after a while start to think, is there some way we can get out of here early? Can we get out by good behavior? Can we break out and escape? Other prisoners, they don't even mind being in prison. They have no plans to get out. I know one person. He thought it was great going to prison. You know, they give you jeans, they give you, this TV there, Some prisoners think like that. You're well taken care of. And I hear that in New Zealand prisons, anyway, if you really want, drugs and things like that, they'll get into the prison somehow. An intelligent prisoner thinks about how to get out. I'm sure you've read all about the jailhouse lawyers. Prisoners in who spend, they have so much time, so they spend all their free time studying law books to figure out how to get themselves out on an appeal, find some technicality that was wrong in their court case, and then they try to get out. They do that in New Zealand? Yes. In the States, it's quite common. They call them jailhouse lawyers. They just spend all their free time in the prison library studying law books, you know, trying to find some loophole to get out. Well, we should have that attitude. We should become jailhouse lawyers to get ourselves out of the material world. But there's certain influences that cause us to remain within this ocean of becoming and unbecoming. We become attracted to certain things. We become attracted to certain hopes. And therefore, we don't have the desire to go back home, back to Godhead. You have to look in your heart and see, what is your desire? What is it that you want? What are the hopes that are driving you onward? What are your aspirations that are driving you onward? You have to look in your heart and see. Sometimes it can be quite embarrassing. The aspirations and hopes in my heart that are dragging me on are, I hope my body will have a good time. I hope there'll be good sense gratification. There'll be good physical experiencing. We've already discussed many times the illusion about such a thing as good sense gratification. There's no such thing. Even when you think that you have experienced good sense gratification, you should note how soon it takes before the frustration and anxiety sets in. The more you engage in sense gratification, the more you set yourself up for anxiety and frustration. That's the amazing thing. You think you had a good time. Oh, what a night. Oh, what a weekend. But then, very soon, the curtain of anxiety descends. It's amazing, isn't it? You don't see, however, that the anxiety and frustration is part and parcel of the sense gratificatory experience. You think, oh, what a night, oh, what a weekend. And then, wow, Monday morning, oh, back to the anxieties, back to the frustration. Now, the Monday morning, so to speak, speaking metaphorically, it could be any day of the week, the Monday mornings are part of the Friday, they're part of the Saturday night fever. It's all one package. But you divide it. There's the good sense dedication, and then there's the frustration and anxiety. This is the working of Maya to cause you to wrongly divide the situation. But the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam allows you to see it all together. Sense gratification and anxiety are one substance. That's why this material world in Sanskrit is known as Kunta, the place of anxiety. And the spiritual world is known as Vaikuntha, the place without anxiety. Now here you are in Kunta, the place of anxiety, trying to live a life free from anxiety. Trying to live a material life free from anxiety. It's not possible. It's very unnerving how material nature upsets your plans. Something always comes up. Health reasons, financial reasons. War reasons. Something always ruins your hopes for peace and contentment. If society doesn't break down, your own body breaks down. We've discussed this point many times. This thing that there's good sense gratification is just an illusion in the mind. You have to deal with that in Krishna consciousness. You've got to analyze it. If you're smart, you'll analyze it. What do certain activities lead to? They lead to me becoming enmeshed and ground up in the processes of material nature. If we said, okay, we're going to take Shara and throw her into the dryer and press the button, everyone would think, oh, that's very cruel. So just spin around inside there and become all banged up, and it'll be very hot in there. How could anybody do that? Stuff someone in a spin dryer. But if we say, let's put her into the processes of material nature, well, that's no problem. All the best for you. Do you have good career aspirations? Are you getting good experience with the boys? This is the way they welcome you to the processes of material nature. That's why I object to parents who don't raise their children properly, because what they're doing in the name of liberality and understanding and being open is that they're thrusting their children into a tumbler, into a spin dryer, into the processes of material nature. And then you expect it's all going to work out for their benefit. No. They get torn apart, ground up. If you want the best for someone, you teach them how to get out of the processes of material nature. You teach them how to get out of the spin dryer. So, day after day, we watch people come here, and you can see they're in the spin dryer of material existence. They're bruised from being spun around. They're hot and sweaty from their material desires. But they think they're all right. Yeah. My spin dryer is pretty nice. How's yours? I've been bouncing around in different ways. My spin dryer gets hotter than yours. We're trying to get people to come out from the processes of material nature. What impedes our helping them, in fact, what impedes our helping ourselves, is these crazy dreams we have in our mind. You have to not be afraid to look at your own dreams and aspirations and see how they measure up against reality. For example, last night we were speaking in particular, that night, about the female dream, that there's going to be a man someday, somewhere, who understands what the woman wants before she says it. All the ladies agree this is female paradise. You agree also? It's amazing, they all think like that, huh? And what's the chances? Right. It's just something in the mind. So then you have to ask yourself, what's influencing the mind to come up with these kind of things? The men have their dreams too, but we won't talk about it. Male dreams are pretty gross. So, what's acting upon your mind to come up with these illusions? Which when you look at them, analytically, they're completely foolish. Someone who's intelligent and who wants to get out of the processes of material existence has to look at your aspirations and hopes, the things that drive you, very clearly. You can't do that under the influence of the mode of passion and ignorance. Mode of passion and ignorance means you don't see anything clearly. At least when you start to ask questions, there's hope that you can get out of this process of material existence. Therefore, someone who wants to advance in Krishna consciousness is always questioning material nature. Why is this? Why am I doing this? Why do I feel this is important? Then, besides getting out of material existence, you need the positive. The positive is, how do I become attracted to Krishna? How do I become attached to Krishna again? Why should I be attracted to Krishna? Why should I be attached to Krishna? What is it about Krishna that so that I should dedicate my life to reviving my love of Krishna? What's so great about Krishna? You have to ask yourself that question. Once Prabhupada commented that a major problem is that so many of his disciples don't actually accept that Krishna exists. as Krishna has himself, qualities, form, pastimes. They have some vague conception of God in their mind. And they think that Krishna consciousness fits very nicely with that vague conception of God. But actually, Krishna consciousness has nothing to do with a vague conception of God. Therefore, you have to ask yourselves some questions. Who is this Shyam Sundar, complexion like a dark rain cloud, peacock feather in his head? Venam kananta maravindadvaradaksham vahavatam samasitam buddhasundaraya. Threefold bending stance. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Eyes like blooming lotus petals? Why is this the Supreme Personality of Godhead? You should ask yourself those questions. What is this devotional service that we're performing? What's so special about it? How is it a mystery? This is being inquisitive. This is being intellectually alive in the proper way. Prithvi Maharaj is giving us such a nice example in the way he deals with Shukadeva Goswami. Oh, great sage, representative of the Lord, kindly satisfy my inquisitiveness. In all that I have inquired from you, and all that I may not have inquired from you from the very beginning of my questioning. Since I am a soul surrendered unto you, please impart full knowledge in this connection. In other words, Prithvi Maharaj has a right to ask all these questions because of the relationship he has established with Shukadeva Goswami. I am a soul surrendered unto you. Therefore, you please instruct me. This is the process of Bhagavad Gita. Tad viji pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. Krishna says, if you want to know the truth, in chapter 4 of the Gita, the Lord has explained so many forms of yajna, sacrifice. Then he says, if you want to get to the bottom of this whole system of yajna, sacrifice, then you approach a spiritual master. Tadviri pranipatena, pariprashna. Before the prashna, before the questions, there should be submission and service. Pariprashna sevaya. The submission and humble attitude and service allows you to understand the answers. It is not that it's simply with a researching capacity, intellectual capacity. This is why bhakti is mysterious. And this is why we should be very concerned with our service attitude in Krishna consciousness. For me, it's very enlivening when I hear devotees asking questions. How can they do better service? How can they do more service? This shows there's life. Someone who's dead doesn't think like that. But when you're alive in Krishna consciousness, you're bubbly and effervescent and caught up in the pursuit of pleasing Krishna's senses. We just have to recover from our blighted existence in material life. We stagger into the door often in Krishna consciousness, like refugees from the material world. And so we think, oh, I found the place where I can just escape material existence and I won't have to worry about loving or caring or serving or doing anything with affection. All right, it's good you come to Krishna consciousness to escape material life. Krishna does say that four kinds of persons approach him, and one of them is the distressed. But you can't just stay in bhakti yoga based on negatives. Well, I hated the material world. I was frustrated. I was mistreated. I was abused. I was exhausted. I was fried out. That can get you in the door. It's a smart thing to be exhausted with material existence. But then, what are your positive reasons for staying here? Then you have to start inquiring about Krishna. Once again, your inquiries fall into two categories, the positives and the negatives. The negatives are, how do I avoid the processes of material nature? And the positives are, how do I become attracted to Krishna? That means you have to have some understanding that the processes of material nature are not for you. And you also have to have some understanding that Krishna is for you. And this becomes a lifetime pursuit. That's why someone who is actually made Krishna conscious is the goal of their life is so overwhelmed by that calling and what it entails, you don't have any time for sense gratification. I was talking with Jen last night. She was saying how she doesn't feel she has time for all the things that are required. I said, well, it's always going to be like that. Get used to it. Because Krishna is unlimited. That means Krishna's service is unlimited. You're always going to feel there's more than you can do. That's not a bad thing. That's good. You're on the platform of eternality and unlimited options. The more Krishna conscious you are, the more you see how devotional service is an unlimited world. But in the beginning, you think it's a restriction because you're thinking in terms of your senses. Anything that restricts my sense gratification, that's a limitation. So how many possibilities do I really have in life? You know, can't have illicit sex anymore. I can't have intoxication. No meat eating and no gambling. So that must make life pretty sparse. Very Spartan, as they say. What is there to do? But then you find, by performing bhakti yoga, that a whole new world of unlimited expansion opens up. Then you start to get faith based on realization, and you start to stride forward mightily. But don't think that there's going to be a time when you don't feel overwhelmed. You're dealing with Krishna's service. There's no limitation. That's a good feeling. There's so much I can do. There's so much I need to improve in for Krishna's service. That is part of the ecstasy of devotional service. You can never satisfy Krishna enough. And simultaneously, what is going on? Krishna is competing with you. Krishna is going to try to serve you more than you can serve Krishna. That's what's actually going on. And in the beginning, you don't notice that due to so much contamination. You're trying to wash it off. But the fact is, Krishna will give you more than you can give him. You can't believe that in the beginning. You can't see through the curtain of Maya to understand that. You think, oh, I've given up so much. I'm controlling my senses. I'm sacrificing my illicit sex. I'm sacrificing intoxication. All for Krishna. I've given up all my valuable jewels. All the diamonds and rubies of my life. What are the diamonds and rubies of your life? Yeah. Illicit lust affairs and intoxication. Yeah. Nightclubs and eating abominable things. Those are all the jewels of your life you've given up. So in the beginning you feel this sense of restriction. Getting up early every morning. You can't just wallow in bed in the mode of ignorance. Some of you miss that. Just wallowing in bed late in the morning in the mode of ignorance. You miss that for you. Just laying there, just, you know, comatose. That's supposed to be pleasure according to the material standard. Actually, let me warn you, it'll get to the point where you don't want to rest, but you need to sometimes in Krishna consciousness. But you actually don't want to. It's just a reversal the way it was before. You have to force yourself to rest sometimes. But you just, oh, I'm just laying here. You know, so many things I could be doing for Krishna. Just see how your whole conceptions of life have become reversed. Before, you thought, oh, it's great, I can just lay here and do nothing. Yeah, this is wonderful, this is the ultimate. Soon you'll be thinking, oh, I have to rest this body for Krishna's service, but so many things I'd rather be doing. A devotee does everything for Krishna. Even a devotee rests for Krishna. So what are the great jewels that you've given up? You'll see that an unlimited plane opens up, an unlimited realm of bhakti yoga opens up, and your senses come alive in different ways than what you thought before. So you're always going to feel overwhelmed in Krishna consciousness. Get used to it. That's a healthy symptom. Ultimately, you're going to understand you're feeling overwhelmed by loving possibilities. That's where the nectar is. You're serving Krishna with affection, preeti, and well, you may not understand it in the beginning, but in time you will. It's a wonderful thing to be overwhelmed with the possibilities to show love. Like I was talking to you all the past few days and just thinking, this is a wonderful opportunity for me to show love for Krishna's devotees. How can I do enough for them? That's quite an exhilarating feeling. To know you can actually give people the right thing, whether they accept it or not, at least you know you're giving people the right thing. And you know they're Krishna's parts and parcels, therefore they're so dear to Krishna. For example, in Bhagavad Gita, after the Lord says, Tadvidi Paripatina, Pariprasnena Seva, if you want to know the truth about the system of sacrifice, it is essential for you to have to sacrifice in some way. If you want to know all about these different sacrifices I've explained, then you approach the Guru, inquire submissively, render service. What does the Lord say in the next verse? Yajgatva Mokshashe Shubha. When you have done that, the symptom of your genuine approach will be you won't be in illusion anymore, and you'll see all living beings as in Krishna, as belonging to Krishna. That's the result of your having made a genuine approach to the Guru. You'll be able to get the vision that all living beings belong to Krishna. If all living beings belong to Krishna, then you want to act in such a way that they become Krishna conscious. That's your individual responsibility. And you try to encourage everyone to become Krishna conscious. Sometimes you have to correct them if that's your position. Do not be afraid of this feeling that, oh, there's always so much to do, there's always so much to read. You can read Prabhupada's books again and again and again, and you'll always find, oh, there's so much more here than I thought before. How will I ever get to the bottom of this? Have any of you had that feeling reading the books? You read them again and again and again, and sometimes they seem deceptively simple. Okay, it's Bhagavad Gita, Tisha Upanishad, I've got that all mastered. Then you read it again, and so much more here than I saw before. At first, sometimes it even seems easy. Yeah, I can memorize these purports, I can repeat them. But then you start going deeper and realize, even though I've memorized the purport, I really don't understand its depths. This goes on and on and on. You'll spend at least a whole lifetime like this. So you might as well get used to it. You have entered into the ocean of bhakti. There's no limit to the depths. Okay, so now that you're having this feeling of being overwhelmed, which is good, the next thing is to make priorities. Not just feel overwhelmed, but you have to make priorities. That's another aspect of devotional service. Within the ocean of bhakti, You're overwhelmed by the currents in the ocean, but you make priorities. You chart your way through that ocean. It's a delightful way to live because the ocean is spiritual and your priorities are spiritual. The means is the same as the goal. You're serving Krishna to attain the goal of service to Krishna. This is what makes Krishna consciousness so holistic. You chant Hare Krishna to attain the goal of chanting Hare Krishna. What you're trying to attain is not different from what, from the means you're using to reach the goal. This is why you're peaceful when you properly apply Krishna consciousness. You have already everything you need. Now it's a question of becoming more conscious that you already have the spiritual world. You already have the Hare Krishna mantra. You have all the devotional necessities. Therefore, within the ocean of bhakti, and you're feeling overwhelmed, so many things to do, so many things to read, I've got to improve my chanting, I haven't mastered Bhagavad Gita, my Vridanga playing isn't on time. So I don't know how it goes. Then you got to take care of your body for Krishna service. Oh, I'm not eating enough. Or I'm eating too much. It's like I told someone, say, first you have to eat more. Sometimes you have to watch it like that. You want to put on weight? Quick way is lots of those infamous milk products. Anyway, it's a quick way to put on weight. If you want to lose weight, cut them out. So, it's not good to be overweight, and devotees shouldn't be underweight. They should be healthy in all respects. Make priorities within the ocean of bhakti. Your system, your attempt at prioritization, that is an offering to Krishna. You have to do that. Under guidance of the spiritual master, you have priorities. It's not that just because you're within the ocean of bhakti, you don't have to develop some kind of plan and some kind of way of approaching all the things that you have to do and that overwhelm you and that arise. You have to have a personal system of prioritization. So we've given you all some general basics. Chant your rounds with attention. That's your morning priority. Many persons trying to perform bhakti yoga never get this principle down. They never get down this principle of attentive chanting in the morning. Therefore, the Krishna consciousness never really takes off beyond the belief in Krishna. And then we've asked all of you at some time during the day, you seriously read these books because they'll teach you about Krishna. They'll teach you about the negatives, the positives. You'll understand who it is that you're serving. If you don't understand who you're serving, you'll lose strength. And Maya will convince you to go back and render material service. Don't be afraid of running a daily effort to persuade yourself to stay in Krishna consciousness. Don't think that's a bad thing. Gradually, by that effort, you'll feel quite well situated. But in the beginning, some effort's required. Just like we were discussing last night, we weren't here, about the effort it took for everybody to begin smoking cigarettes. You were a cigarette smoker? Yeah. But you probably know many persons. Yeah, it's not that they took their first puff and, wow, this is it, it's so natural. They had to work on it. Going through a bunch of austerity. Or beer drinkers. You know about that one. Was it nectar at first? But under social pressure, you got into it. Now, everyone says it's good.
I think it's
Everyone says this is where it's at. You have fun with beer. It's cooling and quenches your thirst in the summer. It makes you everyone jovial and happy. Well, it tastes nasty, but everyone... Oh, that's probably just my hang-up. You know, I'll get over it. What everyone thought, just my own hang-up. You know, I've got to show my... You know, I'm a man. You know, I can handle my Red Lion. They have beers made especially for ladies. What's that? So, this is an example of you conditioning yourself to something that's not natural in the beginning. Well, why can't you do that for Krishna? And we've already pointed out often how, you, in terms of establishing a relationship with someone, you put up with so much in order to taste a little bit of nectar. Right? You convince yourself, well, this is what you got to go through to be with this person. We're going to make this relationship work. So you willingly tolerate so much. You tell others, yeah, I know it's off the wall what he did or what she did, but, you know, it's a relationship and we're going to make it work. Like one devotee here was telling me, yeah, you know, marriages are a lot of work, you know. You spend a lot of time trying to get this male-female thing to work right. But you're committed to the process, even though it's austere at some times. Why can't we do that much for Krishna? Find out who is Krishna, why we should be attracted, why we are attracted even when we don't realize it. Our point was prioritization. Within the ocean of bhakti, those devotees who can prioritize within the ocean of bhakti, they can actually do some meaningful service for Krishna. Others, I mean, we're happy that at least they're within the ocean of bhakti, but they haven't developed to the point yet where they can have some kind of incisive intelligence. Buddhi yoga. Buddhi means intelligence. Within the ocean of bhakti, you should have your priorities. And realize you're always going to be overwhelmed. There's always going to be so much to do and so much you haven't done. There'll always be impurities you're going to see in yourself. Oh my God, that's still there. I thought I had been over that. Gosh. don't hang yourself because of this. It's a symptom of bhakti that there's always going to be more things needed to be done, more, because it's based on love. There's no limit to love. There's always unlimited improvement available. Even what did Lord Chaitanya say? Lord Chaitanya, he's Krishna himself coming as his own devotee. He said, you're saying I'm a great lover of Krishna? Let me tell you, if you see tears in my eyes when I chant, you should know it's just a show. Because if I actually loved Krishna, I would have died long ago out of separation. So you're always feeling there's more and more that needs to be done. And you always become more aware of your contaminations. It's just going to go on and on like that. Because humility is an inherent ingredient of bhakti. So don't be shocked at your own humility. It's manifesting as the ability to see your faults clearer and clearer. And you're always going to... Like Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, how does he describe himself? More sinful than Jagai and Madai, lower than the worm and stool. He's written the most exalted scripture. But he's thinking like that. He's part of the sentiments of bhakti. Don't think that, you know, after some time of performing Krishna consciousness, one day you're going to think, I'm on top of it all. I've got it together. I'm expert. I've mastered myself. You're not going to feel like that. Bhakti yoga is something else. You're going to feel more and more dependent on Krishna. It's like the songs of Narottam Das Thakur or Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Krishna, I have no good qualities. Spiritual master, your goodness is all that I've made of. Bhakti is a totally different, totally distinct realm of experience. Very mysterious. And we're trying to get you all to the point of becoming comfortable with bhakti, because it's a different realm. Therefore, please don't think there'll be a limit to your feeling overwhelmed. You're becoming conscious that opportunity for serving Krishna is all around. Hopefully, you're becoming compassionate. You're becoming more able to see the suffering of the people. It's like often when I'm preaching, I like to call devotees and say, do you see this situation? What, do you see it? Do you see it?
Yeah.
Of course, it's enlivening until even they're starting to be able to see it. And so many devotees there, we say, well, yeah, I was like that too. It's not so strange. But it is strange. It is perverted. As you advance in bhakti yoga, your compassion increases. It breaks your heart to see people ruining their lives, wasting time, caught in the processes of material nature, not doing their spiritual glories enough justice, thinking there's so many important things to do with their life than to become Krishna conscious. I have to do this, I have to do that. One person just a few days ago was telling me, well, after I do all my business deals, save a lot of money, then in May I'll be ready to be Krishna conscious. Life doesn't work like that. It's not that Maya sits back and says, okay, stay in Maya for 5 months and then in May I'll let you out. If you don't have a plan to get out now, you won't get out in 5 months. This is stated in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam, that there is nothing more injurious, there's nothing more foolish than to think there's something more important than your own self-realization. But people say, first I've got to get this out of my system, I have to pay my debts, I've got to get more money. As if Maya is just going to stand around and let you. Delay your Krishna consciousness safely. Now, as soon as you delay, you're in a dangerous condition. Because by interacting with the material energy, you become covered. You pay a price for every time you interact with the material energy when you're not Krishna conscious. That price is you become more ignorant. That's why I say a good overture to make, you know, when people meet each other is, would you like to become ignorant with me? Let's become ignorant together. That's the reality. By implication in material existence, you become more ignorant. So here you are saying, let me be ignorant for 6 months. Let me implicate myself more in ignorance for 6 months. And then I'll come out of it and be Krishna conscious. You're thinking that your consciousness now will be the same as it will be in 6 months, despite your implication of material existence. What you don't understand is what happens between now and 6 months later is that you become more covered. Your consciousness changes. You pay a price. But you're thinking, right, okay, I can see now that in 6 months, I'll be able to start Krishna consciousness, but just let me be in Maya for 6 months, and let me do what I've got to do, and then presto, I'll walk out of it in 6 months and start chanting Hare Krishna. You don't understand that during those 6 months, you are covering yourself. You're paying the price. So your consciousness will be different from when you said, in 6 months I'll do that. It's hard for us to understand that there's a reaction in consciousness to our material activity. We think, well, it's me. I know me. I can make a clear decision. In 6 months, I'll break free from Maya. But right now, there's some Maya I have to do. Material needs that have to be met. What about your spiritual needs? Yeah, that's always there. But aren't the material needs always there? Oh, no, they have to be met immediately. So to deal with this lamentation, pride in Krishna, pride in spiritual master. If you're going to preach Krishna consciousness, you've got to get used to loving without appreciation, disappointment, and also exhilaration. It will all be there. The spiritual plane, lamentation, pride in Krishna, pride in the spiritual master, humility for ourselves. So if you want to love, then you distribute Krishna consciousness to others. You'll become the biggest lover. That's actually what it's all about. The rules and regulations are there for you to develop love. They're not there to impede love. They're there for you to develop love. Like, quite a few householders, they tell me. Since they came to Krishna consciousness and started following all the regular principles, their relationship has opened up on a different level. It's expanded on a different level. On one level, it looks like restriction. But then, on another level, things open up in a different way. So everything in Krishna consciousness is like that. But to ordinary, mundane vision, it looks like restriction. That's why people don't come. Because they're, oh, the Haris, they don't impose restriction. Right? That's what they think. They think that, you know, the most valuable things are being, you know, are being denied. But then you experience that when you restrict yourself from the lowers, the higher things open up. And that's where your real wealth is. It is a fact. Bhakti is a mystery. Krishna says it point blank in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna doesn't cover up. He says this is a mystery. Any questions? Meaning? Well, look, let's be frank. It's hard to love without attachment. But by trying to love in Krishna consciousness, you become empowered with the ability to do your best to understand that everyone has their independence and Krishna's different control. It's a whole lifetime pursuit of how to love without attachment. It's not like a theoretical thing. Have to get in the water and start to swim. It's a lifetime career of love in Krishna consciousness. That means really how to love, because only in Krishna consciousness. The only love is Krishna consciousness. How to give someone the best, even though they may not reciprocate. And then you can appreciate Prabhupada's sacrifice. Giving to the savage Westerners the highest thing. It's a great demonstration of love, unparalleled demonstration of love. I remember watching Prabhupada do an initiation in Atlanta, Georgia. I was just a 3-year devotee. And even me in my young devotional state, I could see these persons going up to get their beads. I said, this guy's not going to be around in 6 months. You know, you can just understand, just looking at the person, where they're coming from, process of material nature, and you can see they didn't have much determination. I can see that, certainly, Paul, I can see that. But he's just giving a chance to everyone. They have fulfilled the minimum requirements. In those days, it was 6 months, good behavior. And he was just prepared to give that opportunity. He was prepared to give that love. You can hear in his books and lectures, and repeating again and again, you're not this body. What is it like for topmost Paramahansa? Every day, you're not this body. You're not this body. But then Prabhupada astonished me. One day in Bombay, he gave his umpteenth example, an allegory of how you're not the body. And then he said, all of a sudden, do you understand I'm thinking about this all day? I was astounded. Think about these things all day, how to present this, that we're not the body. This is compassion. This is love. Through that compassion to distribute Lord Chaitanya's mercy, you meet Krishna. That's the mystery. Therefore, I'm always trying to get you all to be compassionate, to care for others, to see their suffering. Don't be bewildered thinking they're enjoying. I should hope at least that all of you here now are expert to understand these people are not enjoying. You can see through the facade. I hope at least that much. So you should feel for the ignorance there. That should affect your heart. I'm trying to develop that in you all. Do you see how this person is doing their life then? How can you just stand there and let it happen? It's like watching a child on a roof walk towards the edge. No dignified person can let this happen without calling out something. And then you've got to be prepared that they may not listen. But still, you give your maximum effort to try to help them and warn them. How to do that without attachment to the results? That takes a lifetime of practice. Because at first you may get discouraged. I gave my all to trying to help this person in Krishna consciousness, and they just went off the deep end. Just like, we'll just talk about it up front. One devotee was telling me, one former member of the congregation here. He works at one shop, and so the people at the shop, they know the devotees. They said, we have some extra bananas we want to give to the devotees. So the devotee went there to get the extra bananas. And one of the former devotees was working at the shop, and, I gave those bananas to so-and-so's juice bar. Not to, it's not to you guys. It just makes you wonder, goodness. But you have to understand the deluding potency of mind. Once you enter into the material energy again, you lose your intelligence. It's not like you're dealing with the same person. Simply because the person has changed his standpoint from the spiritual energy to the material energy, your intelligence becomes blighted. And furthermore, once you start engaging in sense gratification again, now the person's got this fear all done up, and then you've got to justify it. That was a waste of time practicing Krishna consciousness. Now I'm into sense grad. Where it's at.
So then, you know, it's like a psychological reaction. Ah, Krishna conscious stuff. Of course, you'll never get it out of your heart, but it's an overreaction. That's a good science role. There'll always be this nagging in your heart, though. Really, what it's, you know. But then you overreact. Anyway, I'm going to enjoy. Forget this Krishna. We even know examples of some of my godbrothers and godsisters in California. It happened 20 years ago. They wanted to just forget Krishna consciousness and go into the material energy, but they were having great difficulty because they just couldn't get Prabhupada and their association with him out of their minds, and they were feeling guilty. So they all went to this top psychologist in the USA, and they paid him like $10,000. Please help us forget. please teach us some techniques to help us forget Krishna consciousness. Anyway, most of them are back today. They couldn't forget. Minus the $10,000, but they couldn't forget. Maybe not back completely, but still they're positive and trying to practice a little something of this thing. So these overreactions are common, you know. You gotta show that, forget that, it's just kind of a game. For a while, such persons become more aggressive about sense gratification than normal sense gratifiers, because they just have to overreact. So you gotta be prepared to see that. You also, if you're going to preach, have to deal with rejection. Someone very dear to you just falling into maya, becoming offensive, rejecting your support and care. It's something you have to be used to. And then you have to remember, I was simply Krishna's servant. They're actually not so much rejecting you, they're rejecting Krishna, but you're the one who, like you think, to be a spiritual master means you get all the praise. No. Not only do you get the praise meant for Krishna, you also get the blame meant for Krishna. All because of you. You told me this. You. You got to take the praise and the blame on behalf of Krishna. So it takes a lifetime to learn these skills of loving and Krishna consciousness. But it's the most glorious thing to do. Alright, just like with our Kieran, for example. 6 years ago, I put everything into him. He was like even my personal servant. You know, he has his wild streak in him, so, you know, I just have to get used to that, you know, the fact that, you know, that first was a great disappointment, but I had to deal with the fact that, you know, this is the way he is, he's got this wild streak in him, and, you know, I can only do my best, but he has his independence. Then after 6 years, I see him again, and what will happen, I can't say, but yeah. We'll give it our best effort, but you know, what can we do? So it is a very mystical thing to do everything to help someone and at the same time be not to freak out when you're disappointed. Because you're doing it to please Krishna. They're Krishna's parts and parcels. You're not doing it to get a sense of, I did it. I saved you. No, you're doing it to please Krishna. I had an interesting experience just happened today. When I was in Melbourne, when was it? it was just 3 weeks ago. It's like a whirl, you know. There was one 18-year-old girl who came to their loft there. And then, you know, I just had one of my hunches. You know. Like when I met some of you, had these hunches. You know, I just felt compassionate. She's 18, she looks totally bewildered. And yet she's come here to hear about Krishna. So after the discussion, I just called her over and just asked her what she was doing, you know, what's it about, and what's her life about. And, you know, doesn't look like she's very satisfied with what she's doing. You know, I said, yeah, probably, you know, you're going through it all right now, the boys and their disappointments and their exploitations. Yeah, yeah. So I said, look, your only hope is to become Krishna conscious. Why don't you do something about that? I just put it all to her on the line. Yeah. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. For some of you here, it's worked. Yeah. Anyway, I just put it all on the line. Look, yeah. I don't know when I'm going to see you again. I don't know if I'll ever see you again, but this is what you got to do. Yeah. So I said, and then I even got very magnanimous, something I don't normally do. I said, look, I'll give you my email address. If you decide to come out of this cloud, send me a message. And, you know, I just didn't think anything of it. I said, you're going to come tomorrow for our next session? Yes, yes. Of course, you didn't come the next day. So that was 2 weeks ago. No, well, you know, I can either give it your best shot on behalf of Krishna, try to show love and care for Krishna's parts and parcels, giving him the best thing. Then before I came to class this morning, I just checked my email, and there was this mysterious message. Do you remember me? I was feeling very nervous about Krishna consciousness, and I'm still feeling very nervous. I'm too nervous to go to the temple. And he told me to chant, and I was very nervous about that. Then yesterday I was very depressed, and you know, I started to chant. It really worked. So, I don't know if you're going to write me back, but could you please tell me something that might help me? So, who knows how it turned out. Still, you have to give your best. I think, well, what are the chances of this person really getting it together? You don't know. At the same time, you use your, yes, it's a fact, you use your discrimination, and then Krishna helps you. All right, any other questions? Mm-hmm. Go over them every day and discuss them with your spiritual master. You get reinforcement in that way. You have to meditate on your service and mission of the spiritual master every day. Mission of the spiritual master is Krishna's mission. It's coming through the civil succession. The life and soul of the disciple. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. It's not that they don't go together. It's just one, you know, you have some primitive, you know, experiences as a child. It's not wrong. I also did when I was 5 years old. Whenever I would lose things, use my keys or something, I would always pray, "Dear God, help me to find my keys. If I find my keys, I will thank you and glorify you." That's primitive God realization. That's primitive God realization. If I say to you, "Hey woman, is that you?" "Hey Kiwi, you're overseas somewhere, and you're from New Zealand. Hey Kiwi, is that you?" Sort of, but not very accurate, right? "Hey woman." "Hey fatty." These are vague, very vague addresses. So you can say it's you in a very remote sense, but it's not specific enough for it to be anything noteworthy. So you can say, "Oh, you must have been up high as good. And God, help me find my keys. If I find my keys, I will thank you and kill it." It's just low level. It's primitive. It's not wrong. It's just primitive. That's all. Now you can understand your childhood experiences. It's like seeing a city from afar, or seeing a mountain from afar. You just see a shapeless thing up ahead, and then gradually you start seeing the clear form of the mountain or the city. It's like that. It's not that when you see the vague thing that is wrong, it's just, you know, you're far away. You understand? So your mother had a good time once you came? That's not her chanting. She tried to deny it. She was chanting. That made her change. Yeah, and Tom. That male-female relationship has all its extra baggage, so she could kind of explore on her own. Now he's back. The door is shut again. Yeah, that will be her eternal credit. Moment of freedom, Krishna Kanta. She likes the body back. She likes being poked. But no one gives attention like the body do. Get under her skin and tickle her heart. So what did she say after? She didn't mind me teasing her. No, she likes it. The ones who like it are the ones who protest it first. Because no one but devotees can pay attention in such a pinpoint, precise way. It's something that, you know, it's not, you're not used to that in the material world. Everyone just misses you, misses the point. They don't really see you clearly. But in Krishna consciousness, you can know how to touch all the buttons. Yeah. I was thinking about the talk I gave about parents raising their kids. Did you put that shoe on? Right, I know that's the way it works. We just have a little discussion about that with some of the other devotees. Because at first we're a little taken aback, and I'm quite often get tired and say, I'm conscious of abusing by allowing them to live in a certain way. You know, what kind of things are you doing? What kind of things are you doing? So it takes a while for them to kind of get used to it, you know, see things in a different angle. I guess it's a difficult view of those two.
But they care for me, and they try to be a wholesome life.
Was it when Jimmy was here? Remember?
Yeah. Yeah, they try to raise me nicely. They try to raise me with culture and say something. What do? They taught me to say things, I think.
Well, yes, it takes time. You don't say ignorant, but you just say recognize that they're ignorant, and ignorance means you make mistakes, you don't know how you're doing. That's even your aim for marriage. Never say it anyway. Just to recognize that they're a product of ignorance, and they're perpetuating ignorance. But even when they mean well, they can't mean well. You don't know what they're doing. All of them. Closed, you know. In the health crisis, I said, go to Ezra, they'll help you.
Oh, you too? I'm having a little focus to touch you in the air. I really mean well, and so.
Hey, forget you. You don't have any understanding, you don't have any
clarity. I mean well.
It's the same thing with Thomas. Okay, they knew well, but they don't know anything. And the reason they don't know anything, that's the only fact. And it's worse when they try to make you live so you don't know anything. So we're not teaching people to hate their families, hate society, we're teaching them to recognize the reality of that. And do something about it based on God. Thank you.